Hello.
Hey Paul, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How's it going, Jimmy?
Real good, real good. Welcome to Guitar Talk. Thank you so much for doing this.
My welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. You're from overseas. I don't know where. So is it Switzerland, Sweden?
I'm in France at the moment,
France. Okay.
originally from Ireland, but now
That's
I
right.
live in
Ireland.
France.
How do you get Ireland confused with Sweden?
I don't know. They're both cold.
Yeah, I bet it is. I bet it is. Well, I appreciate you doing this. I really do. And it was a real treat to finally get to really understand your band and dig into what you guys do. And so I'm looking forward to this. I got a couple of questions though, right out of the gate, if you don't mind, because I've spent some time listening to the single Blood,
Yes.
which I absolutely love. I'm a guy that doesn't like to use a fuzz myself.
Yes.
When other people do it, I love it. And it seems like your tone in that song is just so heavily saturated in fuzz. What are you using to do that?
That is a fuzz war pedals made by Death by Audio, I think. So it's that, and I also think there is Electro-Harmonix pitchfork with the octave down as well.
Right.
That became a theme for the album. That was kind of the go-to sound for
So
a lot of tracks.
I can expect that tone on more songs on the album. Really cool,
For
really
sure,
cool.
for sure.
I don't know why it is that when I use a fuzz, I just don't ever like it. It just like, that just doesn't sound good to me. But when other people do it, I go, wow, that's amazing.
No, I know exactly what you mean. I think for years, I would use it in the studio, and then when you come to do it live, it would just be too uncontrollable, and you have to set up a gate or a loop that just switches on for the fuzz, and it was always hard to get it usable and plug and play. But kind of in this for this album, that was one of the things, just not worry about what happened before, and just try new tones and kind of start all over again.
So are you a guy that likes to play around with gear and equipment and try new things, discover new things, or are you the kind of guy that typically, I get my sound, you know what I mean? Because some guys got a sound, it doesn't ever change. That's their sound, and that's cool. But
Okay, a bit of both. I think certainly in the studio you have the freedom to experiment, and I think you should take advantage of that. But I mean, playing to do a gig or a jam session, it's a Marshall, Les Paul, some sort of Boost, a wah tuner, and away you go. And I think you can do 90% of everything with that.
Right. Well, sometimes simple is definitely better in that. So you're an analog guy. I mean, do you get into any of the digital works, UA plugins, Kempers, fractals, anything like that?
Not so, I would be mostly analog, but the way things are now, of course, I've delved into some digital stuff. Mostly neural DSP. Enjoying that. The Line 6 as well. Haven't gone down the Kemper route yet. That was I've been looking at that, and every time I go to pull the trigger and get one, I hear a story from someone and they say don't do it.
Really?
Yeah, I think the software is starting to catch up, I think, with what I've heard of Fractal and Kempers. I don't have much firsthand experience, but
Yeah.
there's I think that latest neural DSP, I think it's called the Tone King.
Yeah.
Just kind of that's one of the best of for a classic rock bluesy kind of sound, which I think
Right.
that the in the box stuff tends not to do well. Good for metal, but this is the first one I've heard
Yeah.
that I've thought that's kind of comparable to a live
Yeah.
sound.
Yeah, there's some guys that I know, some really great players that are heavily into the Kempers and the Fractals and stuff like that now. And I was kind of taken back. You know, I was talking to one of the metal bands that was on tour, and they were saying that they did some big festival with lots of bands, and every single band had a Kemper. You know, there was like nobody, nobody had an analog amp, which I personally, man, don't you love the feel of that air as it pushes up against the back of your legs? And I mean, there's something really amazing about that versus, you know, the other stuff, which is, you know.
Yeah. No, yeah. I don't think they've managed to recreate that. Yeah.
It's, yeah. Yeah. Even though profile your own gear, you know, in that stuff. It can't be the same. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but it doesn't matter. So the album was recorded on your part with all analog gear, and did it straight Marshall and Gibson the whole time, or?
No, it was kind of strange. I think there might just be a Les Paul on one song. Not sure if it lasted to the mix, but mostly Strat and Telecaster on this one. I have a first day we went in. So I have a couple of Les Pauls. I have a Strat, Telecaster, some Zomitis, some PRS. So we brought all those in. There's some nice guitars in the studio, and we just did a shootout. My Strat, which is, it's actually a Nash, reproduction relic.
Right.
Sounded great. And there was, I think, a Fender Custom Shop Telecaster from maybe 2004 in the studio. I just fell in love with straight away. So they became the two, and they worked really well, I think, with the fuzz. Maybe that was the single coil with the fuzz was the good combination, whereas the Les Paul can be too much, maybe, I don't know. But it was those two guitars, and then with the amp shootout, what do we have? There's two Plexis. One was reissue, one early 70s. It was a Ampeg, I think a VT40, which is that's a nasty thing. That's on a good game with the fuzz, and it makes those sort of single coil guitars, it makes them sound bigger than you would imagine. What else? It was a Bad Cat Black Cat 30. It was on a lot of stuff. It was this kind of boutique THD, the guys that make the hot plates.
Yeah.
I think it's called a Bivalve 30. That was on some stuff. And a Fender Princeton. I think that might have been, that came halfway through the session, and then it ended up being on everything. So it's kind of step away from the Marshall and the Les Paul, actually.
Yeah.
Saying that does 90%.
Yeah, that's eclectic. That's really cool. Now, I noticed the telly that you're playing that I've seen photos of or images of with you had, looks like it has two humbuckers, or is that look deceiving and one of them's actually like a P90 or something?
It's deceiving. Yeah. I thought they were just whatever standards would have come with it.
Right.
That telly at the time. My telly, I don't know if you've seen that one. It does have EMGs in it.
Yeah.
But they're not humbuckers. They're just the noiseless.
Right.
They have the black cover, so they kind of, you know, they look a bit metal. But
Now, are you endorsed by EMG?
No. That was that was a long time ago. Put those in. I think 2008.
That was that. But
they've stayed in, and the battery's never been changed, so it's still going strong. Thank you, EMG.
Yeah. Well, they're great pickups. I was endorsed by EMG for a while too, so I love them. But so tell me about the album. You know, I know it doesn't come out until I believe like March 17th.
Correct? Yeah, that's it.
Sound about right. It's called Sundowner.
Sundowners, yeah, that's it. It's our first record in a long time. It'll be 7 years, I guess, when it comes out. The band stopped at the end of 2017, and we kind of thought that was it. And I got a call 2019. I was our old manager saying chance of a record deal, doing a new record again, if you're interested. So we all got together and just to check if we still had it. Let's go. Oh, sorry, my screen went there.
Right.
We checked if we could still do it, and yeah, the chemistry was still there. So we started writing the record around February 2020, and then of course COVID came. So yeah, that kind of changed the whole course of how things went. But it was good. It meant a different approach. We were lucky. We got a few sessions before that. I think two or three of the tracks that ended up on the record were from those. So we had a nice foundation. And then we just started writing over Zoom, like we're talking now. We bring ideas in, then take them away, work on them some more, meet up again. And we kind of really only had two demo sessions. One in 2020, one in 2021. And then we did the record in April of this year. So it was kind of a bit flying by the seat of the pants. But it, it had its advantages as well, because you could explore ideas exactly the way you wanted to in isolation, and then bring it to someone else and get their opinion on it, and then bring it to the band. So it kind of had this, it was very, it was exactly as you wanted. Then you got some more input, and then you got the magic of everyone in the room pulling in a different direction you never imagined.
Yeah.
Which we've never done before. We've kind of, we either have that spontaneity or we hammer it to death. It's never been had that sort of life to really grow before. So yeah, we did that. We went into the studio with Dan Weller, who another first. We'd never worked with him before, and also the first time we've gone into the studio and met the producer on the first day of recording, because again, with COVID, we talk like we are now.
Yeah.
So I met him the first day, and thankfully it all went well. And the plan for this record was we're going to track it all live to tape. So all the basic tracking, guitar, bass, drums, and a vocal would go down live. The vocals, we go back and retouch them.
Right.
But the all solo, I think I maybe overdubbed one solo on the record, and the rest are all live with the band, which is... I did it on the fourth record. I did that and didn't really enjoy it. And Everyday Demons, we tracked all the rhythm parts of that live. So we've tried it before, but I think this is the most live, and the first time we've done everything to tape. Before we've done the drums and dumped it into Pro Tools and overdubbed the guitars and everything then. But this is the first time it's all gone onto a tape machine.
Yeah.
So the pressure was on a little bit. You had to be able to pull it off.
Right.
And, not having done it in, 5-6 years, there was a little bit of nerves at the beginning.
Right.
But I remember even tracking the first three tracks, we did them, and I thought we were just getting sounds, just getting the rough tracks down to go back and, we'd do it again. And Dan said, no, we're under the fourth song, you're done. I didn't even change my strings, fucking the door. But that was kind of the way it was going down. It seemed to work, so we went with it.
Yeah, that's really cool. So in the past, when you would record your guitar parts, are you the kind of guy that, you're going to record two or three different passes and then pick whichever pass? Or do you really dissect each part, and recreate, like play a part and go, okay, I like that, but I want to change this part. Is that the way you do it?
I think it's changed from record to record, but I probably have a reputation within the band for doing it that way, being very precise with each part. And, I'm no stranger to dropping in, and tuning each string. And, I hate hearing a guitar out of tune on a record. So
yeah,
I don't know if you're familiar with major thirds and minor thirds and how flat and all. I'll tune each chord for that and, drop it in, which takes a long time. If you want to double track stuff and, maybe have another guitar sound, it's can be a bit much. you lose a bit of spontaneity, but
right.
Yeah, I do like to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to take a guess that when you play live, that whatever the parts are on the album, you play them exactly the way they are.
So far. Yeah. Yeah. We did our first gig last weekend in 5 years and, wow. Yeah, stick it to the record.
is it, let me ask you this. This might be a little personal, but is it because there's a fear of, I might screw up if I try to just wing it, or is it, I want the audience to experience exactly what the album is?
At this stage, I'm afraid of messing it up.
For sure. See, now that's honesty right there. I like that. I like that because there's a lot of guys that won't take no risk in front of a live audience. They're just not going to do it. They're going to stay really close to the hip.
Yeah. Well, we used to, the first record we did, Rise, was maybe two or three tracks on that. And every night this, I would try and do the solo different, or start in the same place and see where it went. They're kind of more blues based stuff, and when you're on your first record, there's no, you've no reputation or no expectation.
Right.
Yeah, you can fall off the cliff and hit the ground, and no one cares. And then after that, on our second record, we were opening for AC/DC, and it was 30 minutes, 40 minutes. So you just had to go in and bang, play the new record, best of the new record, singles off the first one. So there wasn't much chance for, exploring a solo and taking it somewhere and seeing what the audience, playing, taking it back and forth. But we did that for a year. So that kind of maybe put me more in that sort of recreating the album note for note kind of headspace. But yeah, I like to. A little bit of jeopardy in the solo too sometimes.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's nice. I think one of the things that I really like about live music is I really love it when a band just doesn't do the same show every single city.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, recently I was talking to Warren Haynes, and Warren was talking about how Government Mule in one season of touring did over 450 songs. Wow. I'm thinking, wow, that's remarkable. I mean, who would do that? Because most bands, they've got their set list and they might have, a few extra that are there for them to play with, but to give an audience a different experience every single night. I mean, there's something kind of magical about that.
Well, Warren Haynes is, that's high level. That's a difference.
right. No, I get it.
They don't make him like that anymore.
No, they don't.
I was fortunate enough once, actually Warren, the Mule were rehearsing next door to us in SRI in New York. And I got to go in and sort of watch them. And I think they were doing, I'm not sure what the show they do at Christmas is. And, it was Dark Side of the Moon from start to finish was the middle part.
Yeah.
And then sort of the Mule new album first, and then the hits at the ends.
Yeah.
It was that was quite a show to see as well. So.
Yeah. Dark Side of the Mule is a great show.
Yeah.
But anyway, I like to ask players this kind of stuff because, I like to see where they are mentally, because everybody's at a different place. You know what I mean? Everybody's like, some guys are really adamant about, this is our music, this is our record, and people want to hear it like this, so this is the way we're going to do it. And so I always find it fascinating, because like if you go see Foreigner and you watch Foreigner every night in every town, I mean, it's just like the record. It's all the same songs. It's all the same talking. It's all the same everything. And you don't mind doing it because they're all hits and it sounds amazing. But I wonder, what's it feel like for you, though? Do you ever think, man, I would just like to explode right here? You know what I mean?
yeah. That happens sometimes.
Yeah.
And you have a choice in the moment to, do I do it?
Right.
And will it be good? Will the guys know I'm going to do it? Do they know I'm going to go an extra 12 bars or whatever? Or am I really going to stretch it out?
Yeah.
Because it can mess it up for them too if it's not pre-planned. I've been on all sides of that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's been amazing. Sometimes it's been a train wreck. but you know, for better or for worse, still, if you feel it, you got to go for it, I think.
Yeah. So what do you think you would say to people that are, you know, interested in getting the new album? What would you tell them about it? You know, I mean, what should they expect? I mean, what are going to be the highlights for them?
I definitely think from tracking it live to tape, it's the most raw album we've ever done. We've had our moments before, but I think this one really takes it to the nth degree. And it's definitely got that live feel more than we ever had before, and which we're always trying to get. People always say this, you know, you're a much better live band than on record. I think we've finally put that to bed. It's probably, you know, the most, I think probably collaborative album between all four members. Like everyone's got their songs on there. And, you know, I think the songwriting has gone to a new level with the experience we have and the time away from it. And, you know, I think if you've heard any of us before, you're going to like this just as much, if not 10 times more. And, you know, we can't wait to get back on the stage and take it to people all over the world.
Yeah. It seems like when a band is really serious, you know, when the players are really devoted to what they're doing and they're really serious, they can't help but get better album after album after album. Because, I mean, let's look at one, probably, I would think he's probably one of your favorites too, Eddie Van Halen. If you look at the Van Halen, you know, albums, all the albums, you look at, okay, Van Halen 1 was amazing. Okay, that was an anomaly. That's like never going to happen again. You know, that's, you know, we're not even going to count that. But if you, and you skip the Van Halen 2, okay, that's so in comparison to Van Halen 1, I mean, that's not really an album, right? But if you follow the progression of Van Halen, it's like they just matured and got better and better. The songwriting got better. The production got better. Everything got better in that. And I think that's the case, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's the case with bands that are really focused on what they're doing and trying to put out a really high quality, you know, album. That's you guys, right?
Yeah, no, 100%.
Yeah.
I had a good friend of mine, Irish drummer, Carl Papenfuss. He actually filled in for James on the AC/DC tour. He's a great band himself called Relish. He phoned me up and said, you finally made your sticky fingers.
Yeah.
Thought, all right, okay. I'll take great. That.
That's a good compliment because that's a great album.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, that's something we'd always talk about. The Stones were, you know, they were progressing to that where they finally stopped messing around and got all the influences and just condensed it into this really hard hitting 10 song album. I think we've finally done that too.
Yeah. I think people, most of the time people kind of flounder around them first few albums, even though sometimes that first one can be a fluke. It could just be amazing. And then everybody's trying to capture that again. And unfortunately for a lot of people that never happens, but you know, but to see the progression, I've only heard the one song. I've heard other stuff by you guys, but I've only heard the one song off the album so far, which is Blood Brothers, correct?
Yes, that's it.
Yeah. Blood Brothers. I really like the song. I think the band overall is great. You got an amazing singer.
Yeah.
Don't lose that dude, man, because he's bad.
Oh, yeah. No, he's here to stay. Don't worry.
Yeah, yeah. I think the combination is just great. Now, I see you guys got dates overseas. Do you plan to come to the U.S. in 23?
Yeah, we hope so. At the moment, the tour is going to start, I think, in March 15th, just before the record comes out, and that'll just be UK and Europe to start off, and then we'll have festivals in Europe over the summer, and then we'll hopefully come to the States in September time. So we're looking at the States, Australia, Japan for sort of the end of 2023. So hopefully that all pans out, and you know, we'll get over them. You can hear the whole record.
That would be great, because you know what? There's so many bands over in your part of the world that never make it over here. Really great bands that just never, ever get the opportunity. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's money or visas or what the hell the, you know, the issue is, but there's just so many great bands over in your area that, you know, need to come here. Yeah. I don't know why.
I think no, it's purely financial with you know, it's tricky to make a tour pay for itself anywhere in the world right now. Never mind, you know, when you fly the band over to to America from the UK and stuff. But yeah, it's we haven't been since 2015. We toured that summer with Whitesnake, and it was you know, it's amazing place to tour, especially playing the music we play. It's you know, it's the heartland. It's the birth of rock and roll. So
yeah,
it'd be great to get back.
That would have been a great tour to be on.
It was awesome. We know David Coverdale, we know quite well from we toured with him in the first record, and I think it was maybe the fourth time. So he's a good friend.
That's a great band. Yeah, an amazing band. You guys got an amazing band too, you know. I really, like I said, I really love the song that I heard. I can't wait to hear the whole album. Mm-hmm. I was a little upset Dustin didn't slip it to me.
Oh, he should have given you the full promo.
But that's okay. I'll wait. I can wait. You know, I mean, I'll try and wait. I'll probably get a little upset, but I'll be all right. Anyway, you know, you talked about albums with out-of-tune guitars and, you know, the issues there. So whatever you do, definitely don't go back and listen to any of my albums. Because it's going to frustrate the shit out of you, I'm going to tell you.
No, it's, I think as I get older, my ears aren't as sensitive.
Yeah.
You know, I can take a cent or two out.
Yeah. I'm guessing, by the way that you've talked though, that you're somewhat trained in music, correct?
A little bit. Yeah. I did music at school, a little bit at university, and I took lessons for about 4 years with the same teacher. So yeah. I'd like to think of some theoretical and technical background in it. But that's probably the kind of shred thing of the, you know, 80s and 90s was what I fell in love with first. But then just when the band sort of came along, my career took a left turn from that and went down more of a bluesy rock path. But all that stuff I'm very into still as well.
So what do you do yourself personally as a guitar player to, you know, to stay fresh and to, you know, keep, you know, progressing? As opposed, you know, some players get to the place to where this is it. I just play the same stuff over and over. Mm-hmm. I keep doing the same and it's great, but you know, are you somebody that's pushing, you know, to try to be better next week? And if so, what are you doing in order to do that?
Always want to be better. Never. Yeah. I think when you arrive somewhere, that's the end. Probably I think it's listening to other music and learning it, or just not other, any music, and learning it really, putting it under the microscope and really learning it. The way now it's possible, you know, we can take a track and break it into the stems, you know, and listen to the isolated guitar parts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even if I'm listening to, say, a song like Hey Joe, learned that when I was 14, 15, thought I could play it. I keep coming back to it. You know, I'll listen to, you know, microscopically all the little parts Jimi Hendrix does in the solo, that all the little slides, little scratches, and just develop the ear that way. Yeah. And I find that is something I can apply to everything. And then just the same old technical stuff like everyone's doing, you know, trying to play a bit faster, more clean. Just keep challenging myself. I think I'm probably getting that thing about really learning a song and also using composition as a tool to further things. Like I'll try and write a song and maybe I can't play it yet. And then that becomes the challenge to do it. I sometimes find that I get much more from doing that than, you know, trying to learn a, you know, a Satriani or a Vice song, which, right. I mean, there's a lot of mileage in that too as well. But I think when you do your own music and try and push it that way, you can really progress a bit quicker, I think. Yeah. And then just like every, you know, I'm still a guitar nerd. I'm still searching the internet, on YouTube, trying to find everything that's going on. I remember there's a thing a few years ago, Cracking the Code. I don't know if you've come across that. Mm-hmm. Troy Grady. Yeah. I learned about, okay, Pixlanting, and then I totally understood why there were certain licks I would get stuck on or would be a bit sticky for me. And that kind of opened up a new understanding of, you know, how to solve some technical problems. If you're, you know, if you think too deeply on it too, you can go down a rabbit hole.
Right.
Sometimes you just, you know, just put it in, crank it, and hit the distortion pedal. But just the same as everyone, I think.
Yeah. So who are a couple of players right now that, you know, you find fascinating that you follow?
That's a good question. Probably at the moment, I mean, it's nothing out of the ordinary, but Jimi Hendrix and Stevie Ray Vaughan, I'm really listening to. Yeah. I think because I was playing the Strat on the record and I'd never done that before.
Yeah.
That kind of, and the engineer in the studio, he was a big Hendrix fan. Like, we'd be talking about, bootlegs and stuff he had. So that kind of put me really into that vibe. And I've been going back to through all those tracks and, you know, Axis Bull is Love, and really trying to learn it. Mm-hmm. And the same with Stevie Ray Vaughan. And stuff like, I was really into Return to Forever, and Al Di Meola.
Oh, yeah.
So really going back into that. I think the first John McLaughlin album.
Yeah.
I was listening to that a lot too. So then there's an guitar player in the UK, kind of jazz sort of, he plays jazz and like some sort of hip hop and trap stuff and electronic, called Mansour Brown. Listen to him a lot too. Just some blues you'd expect, some fusion stuff from the past and some sort of from the present day.
Well, those are all great people to, you know, to learn from in that. Now, are you familiar with Marcus Dummel?
No.
Okay. He's a guy you got to check out. His name's Marcus Dummel. He's from Germany. I think he still lives in Germany. But anyway, I think it's, you know, what's really strange is I ask a lot of players in Europe, you know, about him. I mean, there's some guys that automatically know who he is, of course, you know, especially the guys from Germany in that, but nobody's, no, I never heard of him. I'm like, I can't believe you never heard of him. He's like, you know, he's really a great player. And I think that, you know, since you're into that bluesy, you know what I mean? That bluesy rock stuff in that, I think that you would really find what he does appealing. And when I talk to him next, I'm going to turn him on to you. He doesn't know it. So maybe the two of you will hook up and do a duo album or something.
Yeah, that'd be great. Okay.
I'll tell you what, man, I appreciate the conversation. And I really, like I said, I like the song that I heard. I'm looking forward to the album. And I wish you guys all the success in the world. And if you ever get to Chicago, hopefully,
I hope so.
I can come and interview the entire band. That would be amazing.
Yeah, that would be awesome, Jimmy. And hopefully, when we get to Chicago, the Burrs are doing better than they're doing right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't watch football.
Oh, you're not a football man, though. No.
Well, no. I'm a Steelers guy. You know, always have been. But I don't know. I stopped watching football a number of years back, and I'm too busy for it now anyway. I don't know how anybody's got time for it, but I don't have time. You know?
Well,
I got to wrangle guys like you. I got to get guys like you to, you know, spend a half an hour talking to me, and that's all I want to do, you know?
Well, I think that's maybe better, actually.
Yeah, right. Me too. Well, Paul, I tell you what, it's been great talking to you once again. Best of luck with everything you guys are doing and all the success in the world to you, my friend.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jimmy. Really appreciate it. It's been a blast.
All right. Take care. Get some rest.
Thank you. See you soon.
Great. Bye.